Number one today is Thursday, September 11, 2025, and this is the Week in Charts. I'm sure I thank all you guys and gals for attending. I am having some technical difficulties with some of these things, but I'm working through them, and today was a lot of things were solved and created through a software upgrade, but hang in there. I promise to get all this working better. What are we talking about? Well, current market conditions, obviously, I have a lot to say about that. Your questions on trading, your favorite stock and crypto picks. We'll get to those towards the end of the show, but feel free to ask about any setups throughout the show. And I'm going to continue with my methodology in action. I think it's really important now because the market has been doing so well. And of course, it's important when the market's not doing well, too. But there's nothing to do when that occurs. But right now, there's a lot going on. And I think it's important to just pay attention to dead money. And as I've said quite often, the missing piece for me early in my career was seeing other people actually trade as opposed to, hey, look what I did or whatever after the fact. Now, I'm going to pick up on my Million Little Things series this week. And it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And is your trading haunted? And that'll make a lot of sense in a few minutes. And obviously, if you have any questions, please ask them on the fly. There's a disclaimer screen. As you know, you can lose money trading. Or is off the 7F. All predictions are about the future. And a lot of stuff can happen between now and then. There's all my contact information. Feel free to shoot a screenshot of that. You can also reach me at dave@davelandry.com. All right, let's talk about the mystery charts and the methodology in action. As I've been saying quite a bit, the missing piece for me early in my career was actually seeing someone trade. And once I actually saw that, it began to click with me, even though what they were doing was much different than what I was attempting to do. I was able to see an actual trader trade, and that helped me out. And then I was also part of a hedge fund early on doing consulting for them, and I actually saw him place a lot of trades and begin to understand his particular methodology. Again, nothing like I was attempting to do, but at least it was good to see somebody actually do something. So if you could see me follow my system, and believe me, I'm not the best in the world when it comes to discipline. You know, I ask my wife, you don't believe that. But when it comes to my trading service, because I am putting these trades out there, and I'm going to show you the actual trades, what it looks like. I took a snapshot a few minutes ago, right before I went live. It's like, you know what? I couldn't believe that the one position was worth that much, and I was kind of shocked. And we'll get there. But anyway, to actually do it, and then I have to try to mimic what I'm saying that you should do. And why should I tell you to do something? This is in the trading service, if I'm not going to do it myself. Anyway, this is TFPM. We got in this one back in May. Nice little uptrend. This is a prior mystery chart. Mystery charts are charts that I show before they trigger. Obviously, they're a mystery because I don't say what they are unless you're in the service. But I think it's a lot of fun to say, okay, well, Dave just showed me a setup ahead of time. I don't know what the setup is, but let's just see how it shakes out. And I follow up each week. But anyway, nice trend. And notice that you had Landry light the whole way. You had a couple days with zero Landry light. That means that the lows touched the 30 EMA in this particular case, but that's okay. And again, as I preach ad nauseum, Landry light just counts the number of bars that the lows are greater than the moving average or uptrends, and highs less than the moving average or downtrends. Very, very simple stuff. Just in case, you know, if you want to kind of geek out a minute, the Landry light comes from what someone years ago from the Bronx had emailed me and called me, and he read an article that I wrote in 1990. I wrote it in 95, I think. It was published in 96 in Stocks Commodities Magazine, where I was talking about a breakout from the moving average, a 220 EMA breakout system. And he labeled it daylight because there was daylight in between the bar and the moving average. And then eventually it became Landry light. But anyway, pull back to the moving average. That's a great little pattern. If you only traded one pattern, I think that would be it. Linda Rasky once said, as I preach, you only need one pattern to be successful. And people will, what's the one pattern? It's like, well, it would be Landry light pullbacks. Very simple to recognize, very simple to scan for. And with a little practice, very easy to recognize the best setups. As I preach each week, you want acceleration. Notice that this stock accelerated higher. It trades cleanly. meaning that it tends to go up day after day after day. The corrections are fairly orderly when it does correct, because stocks will correct, and you do want them to correct along the way, obviously. And that's what gives you your setup. But this is a gold stock, and for a gold stock, that's pretty impressive, because usually gold stocks, because of the underlying commodities, kind of choppy and very efficient type of market, gold stocks also tend to be kind of choppy. Anyway, entry was there, stop was down here. Initial profit target up here. So let's see what happens. Not a whole lot, it triggers, comes back in, and you're about 2 weeks into the trade and you're losing money, and you're not very impressed with Big Day's methodology at this point. So you're probably thinking about bailing because it's dead money. Now, they don't always come back. As it'll go on live, I'm thinking, like, I need to make sure I say that again this week. They don't always come back. But as you can see, it pays to just follow your plan for when they do. And we've had a lot of dead money type of situations lately. Dead money is money that has little or no chance of further appreciation. However, you don't know that, okay? So that's where you just follow your plan and honor your stop. So you bank 1,000. This is per 100K. And it's no longer a dead money, at least at that point. Stop goes to break even. So the worst you could do, barring overnight gaps, is break even on the remainder. Let's see what happens. It meanders, sells off a little bit, goes sideways. So now we're stuck in this trade. What's that, 3 months? Okay. Now we're above water, meaning that we're profitable, but we're not gaining any ground on this thing. But we're still above that entry, so that's good. We did take $1,000 off, so that's good. So let's just let the chips fall where they may. The market doesn't always move on your time frame, and I'll get into that in a few minutes too. So once again, 3 months of little or no forward progress, or at least 2 months of little or no forward progress. So once again, it's become dead money, right? Well, you don't know it's dead money, and it comes back nicely, and then it begins to trade back and forth a little bit, and then it begins to start banging out some new highs and works its way higher. So when the stock moves in our favor, we begin to gradually loosen that stop, okay? And we're not moving the stop away from the position, we're moving it with the position. That's a very important thing to remember. When I say widen the stop, you let the instrument, the stock or crypto, whatever you're trading, futures, pull away from your stop, and then you bring up your stop, but not necessarily on a one-for-one basis. You allow it to gradually open up over time, and you're adjusting to the longer term volatility of trend following, and you're also adjusting to the fact that as the price goes higher, it's going to require a wider stop just by percentage moves alone. So if the volatility stays normal and the stock goes up in price, so now let's say a 5% move is a much bigger number point wise than it was when the price was at a lower, when the stock's at a lower price. Now, also keep in mind, if you're doing this right with the trend following and your setups, and you're picking the best setups, and you're getting into the acceleration and persistency and all those great things that I talk about, ability for the stock to trade cleanly, then ideally the volatility is going to increase too. So you're adjusting to all that long-term stuff. Now, I know I say this every week, but if you were to be a pure longer-term trend trader, your percent correct would be about 27%. So 3 out of 10 times you'd be right, or another way of looking at it is 7 out of 10 times you'd be wrong, okay? And that's a tough way to trade, and also your drawdowns are abysmal. A lot of the turtles blew up after the fact. I'm not being shot on Friday because what they did was really amazing. But during the program, they did very, very well. They were in a very good trending market. So I've since, I shouldn't say since, but early in my trading, I should say, I was trying to be that pure trend follower. But I quickly learned that, one, it's tough because you're going to be right 3 out of 10 or wrong 7 out of 10 times, right? And then number two, your drawdowns are abysmal. So my way to mitigate that and try to improve upon those odds is taking partial profits and getting that stop up to break even, and then trailing a stop on the remainder. And even though you only have half the position on, that's plenty. As I've done many presentations before, go back over the last 6 months or so, And I talk a lot about open profit drawdowns, and those are kind of tough. And some of those are really, really substantial. But when you stop out, let's say this thing stops out or whatever, and you make a couple thousand dollars overall in the trade, you look at the fact that you made a couple thousand dollars, you say thank you to whoever you pray to, you know, thank you, market gods, thank you, Jesus, 8 pound, 10 pound, 10 ounce baby Jesus or whatever. And you'd be grateful for that as opposed to focusing on how much money you gave up in the end. I'm just slipping a little trading psychology there, but there will be blood. There will be a lot of open profit drawdowns. And I was thinking as I went live, that's one of the things that the Turtles, specifically one of their leaders, Eckert, was okay, or it was Dennis, I think. Dennis was okay with open profit drawdowns. He had a problem if you had a big loss in something and you weren't honoring your stop, but it came with the territory. You have to be willing to give up money to make money. And these open profit drawdowns could be substantial. But if you look at some of the ones we're in, we're up 40 or 50 or 60%, maybe a little more on some of them. So at the end of the day, maybe you only make 30% or so on the trade because you allowed that to draw down, but at least you made a substantial amount of money. The other thing too is by allowing that open profit drawdown, a lot of times you're able to ride out those corrections. As you'll see with some of these other examples, we've been in them for months and months and months. And knock on wood, especially in the case of the golds, they're doing really well. Now, I've been talking a lot about using discretion, but not throwing caution to the wind. So this was a stock that stopped out recently. Yeah, I do occasionally have a losing trade, believe me. If I didn't, you'd never see my fat ass. And the stop was down around, I think, like 1220 or so. And as I said last week, go and watch last week if you want to know the details on how to apply a little discretion on a stop, sort of nick. In this case, it was a little bit more than nick, I admit that. It went a little further than the stop. But it had closed poorly the night before. There were some earnings involved or whatever. So it's like, okay, we know we're going to get whacked on the open. If we can survive that opening range, okay, with a little bit of wiggle room on the stop, and again, I'm not saying throw caution to the wind, then maybe we could stick with the position. Now, this thing hasn't done a whole lot since. It's kind of been kind of lackluster, but I'm still in it, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Somebody in the Facebook group was wondering if anybody else was still in it. Like, yeah, I'm still in it. I think he used a little discretion. He's still in it. So we'll see how it shakes out. Now, this was not a perfect example. I've had examples where they've had a print at the stop and never actually traded there. I don't know how that happens, but whatever. It's all digital, right? What you're seeing is all digital. So who knows? And I've had other cases where it stopped out by like one penny. Okay. And so in a case like that, it's okay to give a little wiggle room. If you're disciplined, if you're newer to trading or newer to the methodology, then by all means, follow things mechanically and then improve upon them from there. So here's the KGC. This is the gold stock. Kind of a double top knockout-ish type of pattern, a little pullback to the moving average. And there's the parameters down there. By the way, if you want to look at the archives of these, DaveLander.com/archives. If you want to see the last maybe a week or so old, then go to my YouTube channel, YouTube/Dave Landry, and look for Dave Landry's Core Trading Service there. And you can, and I make these public as quickly as possible. Once the setup triggers and all, then I usually make them public within a day or so. But anyway, so there's the KGC trade. Entries here, stop is down here. And by the way, the magnitude of the move on these that we've been in for a while doesn't look that big, but it's a fairly substantial move. That's like about a 50% run, just kind of eyeballing it over here. Okay, so that's a lot more impressive than it looks, because fortunately, it has moved in our favor. Initial profit target up here. You can see it triggers and then bounces around and bounces around and bounces around and bounces around and bounces around. Okay. So in this particular case, you're about 2 to 3 months into the trade and you're barely above water. Okay. Well, you didn't stop out. The stock only had one day, maybe 2 days, where it closed below the 30 EMA, and your stop is still a long ways away. So there's nothing to do. And Ken Lambert once said, doing nothing is harder than it looks, and it really can be, especially if you're a motivated people. And most people who want to trade are motivated. Now, this people just want to get rich quick, which, you know, everybody wants that, right? But the people who are serious about learning how to trade are very, very, very motivated people, which in a lot of cases makes for the worst type of trader. I think it was Eckhart that said, speaking of Mr. Eckhart, that average intelligence is more than enough. And I fully believe that. I have an engineering friend of the family that called me recently, a little older gentleman, retired, and he's kind of expressing a little bit of an interest in trading. But this gentleman is freaking brilliant. And I told him, I said, you're probably too smart to be a trader. The only smart people that do well is trading, for the most part. I mean, as a general statement, okay? Or whatever career where transfer of knowledge actually works, I think would be pilots, because pilots are trained to trust their instruments. They're trained to do things in a certain way, and they're trained to follow proper procedure, because they know that if they don't, they could die or kill themselves and other people, right? Anyway, so dead money, dead money, dead money. Okay, let's just get out. No, stick with the plan, and you end up banking $1,000 here. This is per 100K. And then you stop, comes the break even at this point. And then you begin to trail a stop higher. And again, we're letting that stop loosen up. Okay, we're not moving the stop away. We're always moving the stop toward the stock. Okay. But we're not moving it on a one-for-one basis. We're letting things open up and open up and open up over time. And in some cases, like I'll play keep the change. Like if it goes up 50 cents, I might 56 cents, I might only bump the stop 50 cents. So I got 6 cents on that day. And then I'll keep doing that. And that little bit adds up. And that stop slowly widens out. And that's one of the little kind of games, so to speak. Or if it just goes up a few cents, I don't bother moving the stop higher. I remember years ago when I had a voice, one of the first futures brokers that I had, and I got to know a couple of ladies behind the trading desk and all. And I remember one day I called to loosen a stop on a position. It wasn't moving in my favor, it was moving against me or whatever. And I called to loosen a stop. And she said, let me get this right. You want to loosen your stop? So she knew enough about trading to where she knew that was bad behavior. Now, we don't have that anymore because everything's electronic now. So you have to be your own keeper, right? Anyway, I was kind of shocked to see that KGC had 41.70 open in profits. And I said, wait a minute, that can't be that much. And so this is the account I call my model account, so to speak. And I'm like, well, let me go take a look at that. And I grabbed a snapshot of it. And I'll be damned, that's 41.70 in open profits on that position. And that's on the mechanical portfolio, is a hypothetical 100K. And in this particular case, 1,000 shares were called for, 500 came off, okay? And then you had 41.70 open. So 1,000 plus 41.70, if I could do that math in my head, I think that's 51.70, okay? So that's better than a poke in the eye. That's over 5%. Of the entire portfolio and gain. So that's a really good, decent gain. You can see some of the light gains too in here. And look, we got some losing trades too. There's that VG that I used to scratch it on. And so far it's failed miserably, okay? Well, certainly hasn't come back. It's come back a little, but not enough. Excuse me. Anyway, so lo and behold, you look at the portfolio and just happens to be the same price as it was last night. And you have 41.70 in open profits, okay? The KTOS, which we'll look at in 1 second, 32.37. Now, you do have a loss in the ABCL and the ATAI. So, Dave, we should get out? No, let's just see what happens. And yeah, we might get whacked on those. It happens. Excuse me. Now, here's the KTOS. Again, the magnitude of the move doesn't look that fantastic. But if you go back to July and watch some of the presentations or just back the chart out on your own, you'll see that move is a much bigger move than it appears in this chart. But again, a nice little kind of textbook setup, a nice little pullback, Langerlite pullback to the moving average. So looking pretty good. And again, in those older shows, by the way, I do go into a lot more detail. So if you go to my YouTube channel, again, YouTube/Dave Landry, go to Dave Landry's Methodology in Action playlist and watch as many of these as you can stand. Again, this is the missing piece. Show me, okay? Show me how you do this. Show me where you're going to get in. Show me the pattern. Show me why you liked it, okay? Show me where you're going to stop out. Show me where you're going to take partial profit. Show me how you're going to trail that stop. You can look at the archives, and then you can look at the methodology in action and see these things happen with zero hindsight, because we're doing all this in real time, right? Anyway, nice uptrend attack, nice little pullback to the moving average, kind of, again, a textbook setup. That's a defense stock. Defense is still pretty hot, as you'll see in just 1 second. There's the spreadsheet for the day. Those were the potential setups, KTOS. Okay, entry was here, stop is here. Initial profit target is up here. Let's see what happens. It triggers, comes back in, meanders, and then takes off. Now, a lot of people, now this is only, let's count the days. We'll count day one as day one. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days. You'd be surprised at how many people are going to bail out in 9 days, even though after 9 days, you were still profitable in the position. And on day 10, it broke out. And again, this is where you're going to bank 1,000 per 100K. Stop comes a break even. So barring overnight gaps, the worst you could do is break even on the remainder. And this is what happened. And as it moves more and more in your favor, again, we're going to trail that stop higher with the price, okay? Not against or away from the price. And then as of whenever I took this snapshot, you had 32.37 in open profits. So far, so good there. ABCL, this is a recent one. Uptrend, okay, accelerated uptrend, pullback to the moving average. Again, Landry Light pullback. And there it is. Let's see. There it is in the charts. But the entry was here, stop was here, initial profit target was here. Let's see what happens. Now, on this one, I did not take, you'll notice if you go back and look at my portfolio, I didn't take the initial trade. It had this crazy gap open and then it stalled out and came back in. But I do try to mimic what's in the portfolio. And then today I kind of saw it begin to break out. It didn't do anything wrong. So I figured I should go in and put on a position to, again, mimic my portfolio, my hypothetical portfolio. So I am long this stock from a slightly better price. I got in earlier today as it began to break away from the moving average. So it's $360 open if you followed it mechanically. And it's dead money so far, but certainly improving today a little, at least it was earlier. Yeah, it's doing okay. ATAI, this was not a mystery chart. This set up over the week where I didn't do a week in charts. Again, another little pullback, didn't go all the way to moving average, but I did like the way the stock was performing. Injury was here, stop is here, initial profit target is up here. You could argue that maybe you could have used a little discretion on the entry, maybe enter a little higher because it did sort of find its high and reverse a little bit in early trading. That's fine. I decided to go with the position because at least at the moment it looked like it was doing well. In hindsight, what I probably could have done, now keep in mind when you use discretion, there's always a trade-off, okay? And you have to be willing to live with that decision. But in hindsight, what I probably could have done was watch the daily chart, because if you're looking at a daily chart, this little blip here doesn't look like much. But if you're looking at an intraday chart, it looks like it's going to the moon, and you might get sucked in on that. But mechanically, yeah, you should be long this, and I am long this one personally. So far, not so good. We have minus 272 in open profits, but let's see what happens. Now, keep in mind, all you need is one outlier, one decent trade, and knock on wood, come in. All you need is one decent outlier sometimes to make your entire year. And luckily, we have a few of them in the portfolio now. And that's why you're willing to put up with those losses. All right, any questions, anything thus far? I'll keep rolling, and I know it takes YouTube a second to catch up, but I am watching you guys over there just in case you need something. All right, just real quick, I'm going to breeze through this really quick, and we can pick it up next week and whenever, but years ago, I ran this momentum list, so to speak, the Landry 100, and it was a wonderful exercise. And I think what happened was, well, a couple things happened. The software I was using was no longer being sold or whatever. They ended it. And it was also some work, and the market got really choppy. And it's like, why am I grinding this out? What's coming out of it? And then I restarted it not that long ago, and it's been a godsend. It's been a wonderful thing. And I would encourage you to mimic what I'm doing here. Create your own little momentum list, or feel free to subscribe or become a gold member of DaveLearner.com, and you can get this list for free. You can also get it through my Substack, which is it's at the beginning of Substack.DaveLearner. I'll put a link in post. But anyway, all of these stocks were bought at brand new highs. Now, I did some experiment with this with real money, but for the most part, this is really hypothetical, whereas the trading service is not hypothetical, okay? For all intents and purposes, yeah, it's hypothetical, but I'm actually taking those trades. In this particular case, this is mostly hypothetical, although I will take some trades on here. I'm trying to figure out ways for me to personally monetize this through trading. I think if you had a really big account, then you just buy all 100 of them, okay? And what's going to happen is you occasionally get that 100, 200, 300, and even 3,000% move. And there was one that was up 3,000%. Open profit drawdowns, right, were pretty big. It stopped out, so to speak, at 1,700%. And that was not too long ago. So that one stock made the difference from this, from the closed trades. We're losing money for like a year. And then that one trade made all the difference in the world. So there's your example of the importance of the occasional outlier. And as I've said before, I was criticized once, constructive criticism, for making trading sound so elusive because I used the words streaky and outlier and things of that nature. And I thought about it. It's like, you know, I'm going to keep using those words and keep saying those things because that's what it's all about. That's what the hokey pokey is all about. And that's the missing piece, again, is the nuances, okay? It's like, holy crap, we just got whacked at open profits on this thing. It's like, well, that comes with the territory, okay? Know what to expect. We got a dog, you know? Dogs are great, but we got a puppy. It's even worse. But you're going to be kept up at night. You're going to get some puppy poop on your floor. You know, you're going to have to walk the dog in the rain. It's a great thing, and puppies are great. And I'm kind of borrowing a line of reasoning from Mike Moody about babies. If you have a baby, you have a lot of baby poop. But it comes with territory, and learning all these things, learning these nuances is very important. And I'm going to flesh that out in a second when we get to a million little things. But anyway, these were all bought at brand new highs. Now, in this particular case, this is a stealthy new high. It's a new closing high. New closing highs are very, very powerful. One of the aforementioned traders I was able to see trade, he taught me that. And I'm very grateful to him for that, because sometimes you'll get a closing high kind of hidden within some bars like that one there. And that's can be a very powerful type of thing. Anyway, that was the day it was put into portfolio, and so far, knock on wood, 332%. That's a gold stock, gold and silver. All right. Any questions on any of that? Okay. Looks like I'm losing some people. Do some jumping jacks or something. Hey! As I've said ad nauseam, and this is something we've been doing for probably a year now, everyone thinks that a switch is going to flip, it's going to click, and then bam, you're a trader. And that's not how it works. That's not how any of this works, Beatrice. The way it works is it's just a million little things that make you a successful trader. And it's so many. It's like each week I think of more and more and more of these things. And you know, it's little things like a few days ago, I set up things beautifully. I hate to admit exactly what I did, because it just really, really rubbed me wrong. But I fat figured an order, and I sold something at the market. that I should not have sold. And then the market got away from me. I was supposed to put in a limit order for some huge amount. And that's a little thing. And I think in one of the presentations past, I said, announce your order. You know, so instead of saying, I want to sell, and I think it was, I put in a limit order of 0.30, and I wanted to put a limit order of like 30 or something. Okay. Not that it would get hit, but I would adjust that limit order from there. Anyway, so number 378,199, don't be haunted by the ghost of trades past. Mark Douglas, my brother from another mother. I never met him in person. I talked with him once or twice on the phone. We were supposed to be together on a team on a project, and it never came to fruition. And unfortunately, Mr. Douglas is no longer with us. So that's one of my regrets, that I didn't follow up with him and maybe do something else or try to develop a friendship. But I learned a lot from Mark Douglas early on. Obviously, the disciplined trader and trading in the zone. The disciplined trader for me struck a chord because it was like one of the first really serious books that really addressed a lot of the issues in trading psychology. But anyway, paraphrasing Mr. Douglas, at one point he said, when you lose on a trade, you don't just feel that one loss, you feel the pain from all of your prior losses. And 3 or 4 years ago, I was talking to a client on the phone, and I said that, and I didn't think that was that big of a deal. And boy, he was like, it really snapped with him, like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. And I've been wanting to kind of flesh that out since. And from a psychological standpoint, there is a reasoning for this, okay? And let me just kind of back up for a second. And if anybody who has kids probably knows this, it's like your kid will do some sort of bad behavior repeatedly, right? And it kind of builds up with you. And then the kid might do that behavior again. And you snap, and to an outsider, you look like a utter lunatic, right? And it's not that one little thing they did, it's everything they did prior to that. Well, that's kind of like one example of how that psychology works. And Mr. Hansen said, I love that song he does, bop or whatever, that'll be in my head all day. But anyway, he said, it's like having a brain that's Velcro for the bad, but Teflon for the good. And he was explaining the caveman, okay, in evolution. And if you think about our brains and how fast society has moved, especially like over the last 100 years, our brains just can't keep up. Now, he's going all the way back to caveman time. But just to kind of sidetrack for a second, I think it was Andrew Quick or somebody named Quick who wrote the book Limitless, which is a good book, but it's one of those books that tells you what they're going to tell you instead of just telling you. And it makes me a little nuts, but I haven't given up on it. I'm going to finish it. But one thing that he did say in there was he does a lot of statistical comparisons to like the average person today, okay, consumes more information than a person, and I forget exactly how many years ago, but it's like less than 100 years ago, consumed in their entire lifetime. So our brains have not caught up to all of this technology. And he uses a lot of other examples too, and I need to dig out the book and get the examples out of it. I think I just have it on audio now I'm thinking about it. But even going back 20 years and 30 years, the amount that we're bombarded with today is just crazy. And I think that's part of the ADD behavior, the flashing lights and everything. And I'm pretty bad with the ADD, you know, and it's something that I always kind of joked about it. But now I'm beginning to take it more and more seriously and do some things to deal with it. And part of the ADD is there's just so many shining lights going on everywhere. My wife likes to watch a lot of TV. I watch TV with her at night just so I could spend some time with her, right? But I'll notice like during the day, like if she's watching TV and what she's watching gets a little boring, she'll pick up her phone and start watching videos on her phone. So it's like and I'm not picking on her because a lot of us are guilty of that. Like when I go outside with the dog in the mornings or whatever, I try not to get on my phone. I noticed the neighbors, they're all playing on the phones instead of, you know, playing with the dog or whatever. And I'm not better than them. I'm not judging. I'm just saying that you got to give your brain a break because so much is happening. Now, where I was going with all this is it's the evolution of the brain. And in a lot of ways, we still are thinking like cavemen. We're still animals, if you think about it, some of the behavior, we some more than others. But if you go back to the caveman times, like Mr. Hansen was talking about, it's like you have sticks and carrots, okay? And kind of like the old carrot and stick thing, it's like the stick is something that causes pain, and the carrot would be your food, something that causes pleasure, sex, or whatever else that you're into, okay? Or you need. So we tend to focus on the stick more than the carrot, okay? So he was saying, like, okay, if you don't find food today, then maybe you'll find food tomorrow, and you could deal with that if you're a caveman. But if a saber-toothed tiger, the stick, eats you today, then you won't be around tomorrow. So you're going to be more emotionally reactive to a potential danger, okay, than you will be to some sort of a reward. And there's a whole neurology there that I often talk about. And trading neurology is something that I think is going to be very, or is very important. It's something that I've only started exploring for about 12 years. I was Denise Shaw gave a speech about 12 years ago in San Francisco, TSAFF conference. TSAAF conference. Anyway, I'll get that right. Technical Analysis Society of San Francisco. And she talked about how you can't make any decision without emotions, and then just kind of exploring into that neurology a little bit, learning more and more and more, like a negative impact versus a positive impact. And if you think about it, it be cognizant of this in your own trading, okay? I can't remember the good days I had lately trading. I know there's been a few, okay? I know I had a good week last week or a week before. But when I think about what happened last week, it's like overall it was a good week. But I think about I got creamed on Tuesday. And it still pisses me off that I did that, okay? So the bad does tend to stick to you like Velcro a lot more than the good. And that's something you have to wrap your head around. And the importance of this is that you could end up in like a negative feedback loop. And I've done charts before where it's like I gave a negative, a plus, a minus two, and a positive, a plus one. And even if you're trading successfully, your emotions are going to look like that. They're going to be in a bit of a downward trajectory because of this neurology that we have. And you have to be willing to accept that. Now, how do we fix this? Well, you can't, okay? That's the bad news. The good news is, if you recognize these things and how they affect your trading, then you could take steps in that direction. And again, it's about feeling normal, and I'm going to touch upon that in just one second. I get a little ahead of myself. But if I could make you feel normal in your frustrations and your aggravations with trading, then you could become a better and better trader. And I same thing goes for me too. I'm a very emotional kind of guy. I get very emotional easily. It's just my makeup. My mom was like this, and that's I guess it's in my lineage of my genetics. But you have to be willing to accept all of these things and say, okay, it's okay to feel a certain way. Now, borrowing from the Zen proverbs, getting back to this, is when walking, walk, when eating, eat, okay? And then compartmentalize when trading, trade. My wife is going through some issues, well, we're going through it, right? With her parents. It's like it's kind of like the season. Now, I went through the same thing a few years back, and it was 6 months of kind of hell. My parents both got diagnosed in the same day with cancer, and my father only lasted a few weeks, and my mother lasted 6 months. Almost to the day. And I was helping my sister with my mother. And kind of long story endless, but I remember a few times over the last couple of years, I've gone into my website and looked at some things. I'm like, how the hell did I do all this stuff? I had no clue how I did it. And the way I did it was I was somehow able to compartmentalize. And that's something that I'm trying to tell my wife to do. It's like when you have to deal with a situation, deal with the situation. But when you're not having to deal with the situation, do something else. Okay, focus on your job, your work, whatever. your career. And so I would focus on, it was in this case, it was building the members area of my website. It somehow was able to compartmentalize, and even when I was away at my remote office at my sister's house, she let me have a little small little nook and threw some computers in there or whatever, big screen. I was able to work on these things in between taking care of my mom. So that's kind of like the importance of being able to compartmentalize. So you have to compartmentalize that trade within that one trade. Now, how do you do that? Well, it's not super easy. This is a little random. I thought I wanted to throw this in here. And this is kind of along the lines of feeling normal, okay? And probably the worst thing you can do in trading is have success early on. I don't know of any people that had success early on that are still successful today, but I know a lot of people that fail miserably that are successful today when it comes to trading. And one of the things is, you know, year one, you think it's easy, especially if you have a decent bull market or whatever. And then, you know, you're 10 years in this process, and you're like, man, I don't really know anything, do I? You know, and you do, but you have that feeling. So you're not alone in this. Anyway, I'm trying to get you to it's okay to feel this, right? Sting once saying, you're not alone in being alone. I saw him back when I was in college, back when he had separated from the police or whatever. And he did an acoustic version of Message in the Bottle. I never listened to the lyrics. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Walked out this morning. I don't believe what I saw. 100 billion bottles washed upon the shore. Seems I'm not alone in being alone. 100 billion castaways looking for a home. So his point was, you're on a deserted island, metaphorically, of course, I'm guessing. And you feel like you're all alone. He puts out a message in a bottle, right? And all of a sudden, he wakes up one day and all these messages come back from everybody else. And that's the thing you're going to have to realize is you're not alone in being alone. You're not alone in getting really pissed off when you have a losing trade, because you've got neurology and psychology working against you in a really, really, really big way. And again, if I could normalize this for you and for me from a selfish standpoint, then your life will get a lot easier. So how do we do that? Well, document, document, document. Everything always comes back to that, okay? And you want to analyze the process. Now, said I wasn't going to do it, but I'm doing it anyway. Morning pages have been a godsend for me. I did them years ago, quit, got lazy or whatever. I don't know what happened. I wish I never would have quit. I forget how many years I've been doing them now. Maybe 10. I don't know. I have to go back and look. But it's been a while. But wake up every morning, and the first thing you do is write 3 handwritten pages. Write about anything, okay? Dog farted. I got to do this today. I have to do that today. You know, make out your to-do list or whatever. But stay analog the best you can. Now, I have a digital tablet, but it's analog, okay? It's not like I could surf the web or anything on that. And I try to not get caught up in those shiny objects or whatever. I try to really focus. That kind of goes back to what I said earlier about being bombarded with this information. It's like you need time to get that out of your head. You can't just start the day running. This, I've told thousands of people to do this. I don't know anybody's actually done it, you know, but it'll really change your life. I know someone that does them that did it on their own. That's David Keller, and he's really good with that kind of stuff. And he'll tell you flat out that how important it is. It's one of the best things I've ever done. My wife does it again. She's like, why do you get up so early? And I was like, well, I have to let my brain warm up. But as far as the process itself, you make a trade, okay? What's going to happen to that trade? 2 things, okay? You have a positive outcome, or you have a negative outcome, okay? Now, if you have a positive outcome, you're probably feeling pretty good. And you should feel good, provided, of course, it was a great setup to begin with, okay? Go back and look at some of those trades we just talked about. I think those are great setups, okay? I can prove it to you by saying, well, there was momentum, there was an acceleration of momentum, there was persistency, there was a fairly well-defined setup. and there was a methodology in the madness, okay? Now, every now and then, I'll make a trade and think what the hell I was thinking, you know? But that's the minority now. And by the way, a million little things, right? You're going to find yourself saying that less and less. And when you do, it's like you won't even notice it that you're not saying as much, but that's you're slowly becoming better at this. But even in year 10, like I just said earlier, you'll still have your doubts. And that's okay. Now, let's say you have a positive outcome. You still need to look at that trade, right? And we're all too quick. It's kind of like Annie Duke's type of thinking is we tend to attribute a positive outcome to skill. And we tend to attribute a negative or a bad outcome to bad luck. And that's just human nature. Again, human nature does not bode well for trading. But if you have a positive outcome, you definitely, maybe even especially, need to look at the chart, back the chart out again, and make sure that it wasn't a mediocre setup. It wasn't extraneous influences, okay? So yesterday, for instance, I had to pull a hunk out of a trading account that I've left alone for the last 5 years. I haven't touched it, but I needed to pull some money, and that's where I decided to pull it from, okay? And as soon as I pulled the money, it's because we had some, you know, yearly bills that come in or whatever. And it's like all of a sudden I'm staring at these thousands of dollars because it for some reason it tells you your day change, right? So I'm looking at this huge freaking number that came out of my account, and I felt the urge, what can I do to replace that? Okay. So that would be an extraneous influence. That has nothing to do with trading, whether I should take a trade or not, but it's an extraneous influence. It's kind of like the ghost of trades past, right? So you got to be careful with that. You got to be careful not to trade out of boredom. You got to be careful not to trade because you have to. I feel like I felt like I have to replace that money as soon as possible. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Well, you let the market come to you. Is what you could do. So I feel confident, and I'm not being egotistical, but I feel confident I can replace that money over time. But I know I can't replace it today, tomorrow, maybe next week, or even next month, right? And I have to talk through this with myself because I'm not immune to all the emotions and everything. It's like people think you become a trader, bam, you're emotionless and all, you just like Spock and you do these things. You know, maybe one in a million can do that, but the rest of us, we have to deal with these emotions and all. So you kind of feel like you're trading because you have to. Sometimes you feel like you're trading because you have to, because if you're a highly motivated individual and a hard worker, then you're not really good at sitting on your ass and not doing anything, okay? Great for life, bad for trading. That's a whole nother conversation. In and of itself, things that are great for life and bad for trading. If you look at the trade and you feel shame, that's good. Like, boy, I was I sure got lucky on that one. I picked up nickels in front of a bulldozer, or you know, insert your favorite metaphor there. And if you could say you'll do that once, and I did something once and was a mistake, and my wife's like, well, you'll do that once, and now when she makes a mistake, I'll tell her, you'll do that once, and that's not working out for me, but anyway, but it stuck with me, though, you'll do that once, and so, like, yesterday, for instance, when I sold something at 30 cents, and I was trying to get 30 points, or $30, you know, it's like, well, you'll do that once, so you definitely need to look at the outcome from a positive trade and make sure, borrowing a line from Annie Duke, you're separating luck from skill. Now, let's say you have a negative outcome, okay? And a lot of times when you stop out of a trade and you'll immediately say, I knew I shouldn't have taken that trade. Okay, so that's what I call foresight in hindsight, if I have that right. What I'm trying to say there is, maybe in a more simplified way, is you took a trade that you probably shouldn't have taken. And when you lose on that trade, it just, it's kind of like a, what do you call it? It's a forced awareness. Okay. Like, okay, I admit it was a crappy setup, whatever. So you do going into the trade that you shouldn't have taken it, but you took it anyway. Jesse Livermore once said, a trader, a speculator, sometimes makes mistakes and knows he is making them. Amen. Now, let's say this is one of the worst things could actually happen to you, or actually the worst thing that could happen to you would be like on the left side where you where you make money on a trade, you trip to skill. Now, let's say you have a negative outcome, and this is where your million little things type epiphany, one little epiphany comes along. If you go back and look at it, it's like, well, it was a great setup. So then you could say shit happens. Now, if you find yourself saying shit happens too much, then you need to go back and look at your methodology, look at the markets you're trading. Are they choppy? Is the overall market choppy, et cetera, okay? Now, if it was a great setup, there is a statistically valid outcome, okay? You should be shocked initially when a trade doesn't work because it had persistency, acceleration, and all these good things that I talk about, okay? And a clean setup, clean trades cleanly, and not erratic like electrocardiogram. So if it's a statistically valid outcome, that's a good rep, okay? Because if you would have, if you see the same exact setup in the near future, you would take it in a heartbeat. Now, all of these things, you come back to the trade, okay? So each one obviously is a rep. And as I've said before, one of the little things, get the good reps in, okay? So if you're seeing an F yeah setup, you really should feel that F yeah feeling. And that's one of the big secrets of trading is that when you look at a setup, you're like, oh, I would be stupid not to take this. And if this trade fails miserably, I don't care. I would take the same trade tomorrow. That's kind of like one of those, you finally start to get it, right? Now, if this is an FES setup, then by all means, trade, okay? And then go through this cycle again. But if it's not, and this is the hard part, okay? Then don't do anything. And the more motivated you are, the harder it is to not do anything. There's a lot of days I don't recommend anything in the trading service, okay? And when I go a while for doing that, I lose clients because people are like, oh, why am I paying this guy? But what's interesting is I learned many, many years ago, as I've said before, back in the trading markets days, the salesman would beg me to recommend something, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. And the reason was, it was kind of like a really interesting insight into the client, okay? If I recommended crappy stocks, I didn't really lose a lot of clients, okay? And that told me that people were trading for action. So probably could make more money putting out crappy stocks. I'm not gonna say his name, but I saw where someone who's one of the most famous, horrible traders in the world now has a trading service. And it actually might be worthwhile. You could do the opposite, but I digress. I don't want to be Schadenfreude, but I guess he'll have clients because he's going to probably recommend stuff every day. All right. Anyway, you have to go through the process. And this is one of the little secrets over here is if you don't have anything to do, don't do anything. And you might want to write that down. All right. So again, just to kind of wrap this up, you want to acknowledge the psychology and the neurology. I have to say when the switch flipped for me, or one of the little epiphanies is when I learned that there's not only a psychology, but a neurology to trade. With psychology, you might be kind of like, what's your name, Ariel or whatever. That's not me, okay? Oh, I'm not that or whatever. But neurology, you can't deny, okay? We have this neurology where you have the Velcro and the Teflon, the aforementioned Velcro and Teflon, for the bad things sticking and the good things sliding off, right? So embrace that and live with that, okay? Compartmentalize, you know, try to focus try to focus on the setup, focus on the trade, focus on the process. Try not to focus on the fact that yesterday you had a huge bill that came due and you had to take the money out. And I think it was Joe Rabel back at ChartCon. We were talking about these type of things. And he said he had a really bad week the week prior and he couldn't figure out what was wrong. He was out of sync. Okay. And then it dawned on me, he was having a cocktail Friday night or whatever, or relaxing Friday night, whatever he does. And it dawned on him on Monday, he had to write a $30,000 check for his son's tuition. Okay. And that was kind of hanging over his head, maybe on a subconscious type of level. Okay. So I'm still kind of thinking about what happened yesterday with, you know, pulling the money. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, how am I doing today? How much money have I made back? Oh, I just put a trade on. It's losing money. It's like, okay, going in the wrong direction, at least in that one trade. So you have to really learn how to compartmentalize. And I think that's something that I really need to flesh out. And I think I would encourage you, in case you get hit by a beer truck, to do that on your own too. Learn how to compartmentalize. And you want to document and study the process. Figure out how to separate luck from skill. And boy, bad luck from skill. And you'll do really, really well. All right. Any questions at all, Ed? I know Chief Orban really went off on a rant. All right, let's switch gears and take a look at crypto, and then we'll take a look at stocks. If there's any crypto you want me to look at, let me know. Any stocks, let me know too. So let's take a look at Bitcoin. You can see Bitcoin doing better over the last few days. It was looking a little questionable here for a while, but it did come down and find some support in this level here. So that's a good thing. I would not buy Bitcoin unless it went on to make all-time highs at this juncture. Okay, I don't see it setting up in anything that I would trade as long as it's in this range. So don't rush out and buy Bitcoin anytime soon. Here's something that's kind of fascinating, that's kind of interesting. The crypto stocks, like the IRENs and maybe even Riot, especially like IREN, really taken off as of late. And that's kind of interesting because Bitcoin's been a little lackluster. Ethereum is one that was sort of left for dead for a while. Even while Bitcoin was going up, Ethereum was kind of just tanking in here and looking bad. But now Ethereum is doing well. So if you had to get long one of these cryptos, one of the big Mac daddies, right? Then Ethereum looks a heck of a lot better than the other one. In fact, I actually recommended this as an honorable mention back here. Nice little pullback almost to the 30 EMA. Look at this Landry Light pullback. I'm just seeing that. Okay, look at that. You have a tiny, like a double top. I mean, that, see, this gets me excited. You have a little bit of a double top type of pattern here, double top knockout down to the 30 EMA. It's also a Landry Light pullback. Sometimes you get two or three of these setups in one with a Landry Light pullback. And then here, it's almost a Landry Light pullback, close enough. It looks pretty darn good, generic pullback. Notice it accelerated higher, okay? Popped out of it, came back in, but still doing pretty good. You're just barely above water from where you entered. Sometimes the market, again, doesn't move in your time frame. Let's take a look at the altcoins, or the shit coins. This went up 1,300%. Well, that can't be right. As I say ad nauseum, sometimes when the market's doing really well, the Bitcoin, that is, your bellwether, you could just come in here and buy these ones that are banging out new highs. And you could buy them as they're banging out new highs. And that's because this is still an inefficient market, okay? The other thing that's kind of cool about the crypto is the bull bear cycles. I said bear. People's like, you don't sound like a gauge. Like, oh yeah, that coon ass will slip out every now and then. Sometimes I get real bearish. Anyway, the bull bear cycle, bear is... It's very short. So, and I, you know, truth be told, I don't always pay enough attention to crypto. I'll look at it for 3 or 4 or 5 days in a row. There's nothing to do and I forget about it. And then that sixth day or whatever, everything starts taking off again. So if everything is really moving, you could just buy the stronger pairs, kind of like the Landry 100, right? But you have to, I would like if you're doing it with stocks, because stocks are more efficient, you could have to buy a bunch of them. If you're doing with crypto, you won't have to buy as many because some of these things will go up 100% in one day. Do it in a very small manner, okay? Because it's super, 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 super volatile. I know someone, I don't know if he's still doing it, but he was swinging all kinds of crazy money in these altcoins, and his equity was all over the place. And he was having a hard time mentally, I think, from what I could tell. And maybe I'm just kind of like projecting how he would feel. I don't know. But I was imagining that I would imagine he was having a really hard time with the swing. So make sure you do something like that in a small way. All right. So not a tremendous amount to cover in crypto, but it's heating up again. So we could see some of these worthwhile. Like this one's coming off its lows. It looks like it's a little thin, but it looks like it's trying to bottom out and take off. So this might be something worth going after. I'll take a look at it after the webinar. It's already up 60%. This is how crazy these things are. It's already up 60%, but it might go 120 by the end of the day. We'll see. But yeah, don't risk more than you can afford in crypto. But as crazy as it sounds, crypto is actually probably a good way to learn how to trade because you're going to get a lot of reps in, okay? Just be careful with it, obviously. You know what? I might buy some of that. Let me buy some of that. Just for S&G. So next week we could talk about it. Let me get this over here. Nah, let me hold off. I feel like I might be showing off if I did that, because it's or trying to show off at least. All right, any questions on crypto? We'll go ahead and shift gears to stocks. Okay, let's take a look at the overall market, and then we'll drill down a little bit. First of all, S&P 500, bam, winning. We're at all-time highs, okay? You want to see me make the trade? Let me see if, well, let's see if I can get it somewhere else. Hang on. Well, it's not something that, it's not an F. I'm not feeling the F yet on it. I think it just looks interesting. You've seen me do a few trades in the webinar, so you know I'll do it. Sometimes I get excited, like if I feel like things are going okay or whatever, like, well, let me just. I'm Dave Landry, you know. It's kind of like when I get back from an international trip, first 3 days I lose my ass. 'Cause I'm Dave Landry, international world traveler. The market doesn't give two shits about that. Anyway, S&P 500 up 3/4%. Look at that. All-time high. It's a trade following moron. I'm not gonna argue with that. Nasdaq Composite also up. Nice day there. It's at all-time highs. So that is certainly a good thing too. The Rusty, look at the Rusty, okay? Finally kicking into gear. It has a little fluff to get through, but for the most part, it's finally got its act together. So that is a good thing. That tells me that might be a little sector rotation into the smaller caps, or at least the smaller caps are beginning to wake up. Gold, the commodity, still looks pretty good. It's down a little today, but looking good longer term. Gold stocks, these things are acting like some sort of crazy biotech or uranium or AI or whatever. It's like the quantum computing. They're just going crazy now, and that's knock on wood. That's fine with me. But so far, so good. Their metals overall, look at that, banging out some all-time highs today. That's looking pretty darn good. Some areas like utilities are looking a little questionable, which is surprising. Because bonds, look at bonds. Bonds have been going straight up as of late. I feel like Tiny Elvis. Look at them bonds. They're huge. They're going up. Thank you very much. Bonds up. What does that mean? Rates down, right? And that's a good thing. Speaking of uranium, not doing too bad. Breaking out nice in here. We could see some setups here fairly soon. You would be one something to keep an eye on. What's the other one? URMN or something? Google uranium and you'll get a few. So some other areas like the home builders have really been waking up as of late. And that would make a little sense with bonds improving. Of course, they've been improving for a while before bonds took off, but that's certainly a good thing there. Semiconductors, look at that, all-time highs. Not gonna argue with that. Okay. So far, so good. Made a little base here at high levels. and then took off. Speaking of bases, take a look. And this is something I've been saying a lot lately. The bigger the base, the bigger the launch in the space. And I thought I came up with that, but it's Ralph Acampora. We shared a ride to the airport once. I think it was at that aforementioned Charcon. He is a friggin' trip. He's a nice guy, super nice guy. But anyway, I thanked him for that saying. But it's true, you know, you get in there, nice little base, high level base at that 30 after a long trend. You know, this is stuff that I've been thinking about a lot lately. It's like that could be kind of a setup in and of itself, and something that you might want to write down in case you get hit by a beer truck again. I'm watching that stock, that crypto, Chris. Don't worry, I'm watching it. Technically, it wouldn't have triggered anyway. But I think that if you paid attention to this Landry line longer term, and then look for a base at a high level where it doesn't get too far away from that moving average, I think there's definitely something there. At least bigger picture wise, something you could put behind you. The semis, for instance, would be a pretty good example of that. You get a nice, nice, nice long run, and then consolidation. Look for that breakout. Okay, I think that's definitely a good thing. Pot stocks have been doing pretty good. A little pullback lately, but so far they're still looking okay. So that's that. The mags have been a little bit kind of all over the place, but now they're back to brand new highs. So that's certainly a good thing. Biotech's been on a pretty good run for a while. Does have a little fluff to get through, but on an individual issue basis, we've been seeing some setups as of late. Silver, bam, winning right here at brand new highs. So overall, things still looking pretty good. If you look hard enough, you can find a few weak areas out there. But for now, stick with the long side and use those caveats I've been talking about quite a bit. Okay, NEO, moving average cross trend change. NEO, okay. Well, yeah, Chris, I hear you. The one thing that when you have like a big gap like this, I kind of see that as a forced trend change, but I hear you. You definitely have the moving averages come together. You have this is a little too much overhead supply for me to get excited about. I hear you though. It's got okay volume. It looks okay. That's not too bad. Okay. But I would pass based on this overhead supply, but sometimes I might be picky to a fault on some of these trades. And one thing I tend to do, it maybe you're onto something here. Maybe the small caps might be doing this with the bow ties. But one thing I tend to do is match the pattern to the market. Okay. So if you've got an overall market that's headed higher, and like now banging out the all-time highs, okay, then you might want to try to find patterns that look the same. Okay. So if the market's kind of bottoming out over months and months and months, maybe you want to be looking for those bow ties for those early trends to emerge. But now, because the market has been headed higher for so long and banging on new highs today, then maybe you want to find like the, let's see, KGCs of the world, and maybe something like Katos and Fence or whatever, and look for pullbacks in those type of setups, okay? As opposed to looking for those trend changes. Not that you want to ignore those, and I scan for those every day too, because I have very loose parameter scans. But I think for now, you want to maybe focus on the longer term, getting in those longer term trends as opposed to transitions. And God forbid, when, not if, the market begins to roll over, you want to do the same thing, but on the downside, looking for the bow ties in the overall market and then the individual sectors, and then, of course, drill down to the stocks in that case. Okay. Any more? Any more questions or any more individual picks? Agree, but I have plenty of those open already. You got a lot of those stocks. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So Chris is saying that he already has a lot of the long-term trend following stuff. So he's kind of paying attention to some of these transitions. And you know, you might be onto something, Chris, because maybe those smaller cap stocks, or maybe we're going to see more and more sector rotation happening. And that's always happening. That's why you want to pay attention every day. That's one thing that's good about the Landry 100 is like we have a whole bunch of biotechs, even though biotech is trending, but not amazing compared to some of these other areas. But on an individual basis, we're seeing tons and tons of biotech. So you will, and you might be on something there too, Chris, because sometimes what you'll see is you'll see new trends emerging, even though the overall sector is not incredible, right? You'll, by paying attention and looking at a lot of charts every day, you'll see new trends emerging. So yeah, good job on that. All right, any other questions, any other stocks? Going once, going twice. Obviously, I want to thank everybody for attending. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Anything unanswered, dave@davelander.com. Anybody on Facebook, just you can private message me there. Message me there if you want, if you're a member of the Dave Landry's Trend Traders. Anyway, I want to thank you all again for coming, and may the trend be with you. Thank you so much. You're welcome.